Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on this beautiful March 13th day. It's a pretty day out, a little cooler than yesterday, but but it's not windy at least. The wind's not, I actually had my flag blow down and I had, and it actually broke the hooks off the pole. So I had to go get some new hooks. So it was awful windy the last couple of days. Gosh, this has been a busy week. It's been a busy week for me, for guns and things. It's also been a busy week for politicians. We'll talk about that. Oh, geez. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's also a gun show, a local gun show. The Huron Gun Collector Show is at the Washtenaw Farm Council grounds again today. So I'm hoping I'm going to get over there today to be able to just mosey around a little bit, because gosh, that's a word you don't hear that. I'm going to mosey on down to the gun show. Don't hear mosey too often anymore. Let's see. So that's today and tomorrow at the Washtenaw Farm Council grounds. And the Jackson Gun Show is in that the American One Credit Union Event Center in Jackson, Michigan. So you got two Michigan gun shows. You got a handful of Ohio ones, the American Legion Hall in New Regal, Springboro Flea Market. You know, that one's up every week. I got to check and see. It says it's verified, but, you know, it might just be a spring or a flea market and you got one guy with a gun. So I'm going to have to look into that one, see if I keep talking about it. The Yankee Lake Gun Show in Brookfield Township, the Cambridge Gun Show in Cambridge, Ohio, and the Medina Gun Show in Medina, Ohio. A bunch in Missouri for you guys out in Jefferson City. There's the Jefferson City Shooting Sports and Outdoor Show at the Eagles Club. And I got to say, you probably are already there if you are looking for a gun show. Let's see. Also, Washington County Fairgrounds in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which must be right on the border. Adrian Optimist's Community Building, the Optimist Gun and Knife Show. Franklin Gun Show in Washington, Missouri, the Piedmont Gun Show at the Clearwater Family Youth Center. Now, isn't that great? A family youth center that's hosting a gun show. That's family right there. That's in Piedmont, Ohio, Missouri, and the St. Joseph's Civic Arena at the St. Joseph, Missouri Gun Show. So anyway, lots going on. Next week is the first New York one. And actually, maybe you can have a Cuomo-free gun show. I get a kick out of that. That's also kept us busy this week. It's funny to watch what do they call them? Cuomo-sexuals. That's actually a Cuomo-sexual. It's all the Hollywood elites that were fawning all over him. They're all upset now. They don't know how to act when one of their own is getting caught, you know, the whole Me Too thing. So, any rate, let's see. We have got, what's going on here? Not responding. That's good. So let's see. I was going to talk about, there we go. Few other things that I did this week. I went to the range, had a range day with two friends. I think I told you this story. It's a neighbor who is interested in getting interested in firearms. And he went out and bought a Glock, and then he bought a Smith & Wesson EZ. Monday, we went to, and he and a guy from his church came over, and we all three of us went to the range, and that was a lot of fun. He had never shot a pistol before, and then the other guy hadn't shot one in 6 years. So and even then it was just a little bit of one shooting, and he had bought this gun like last year and hadn't shot it yet. Well, they hoped to take some classes and things like that. So I got him acclimated. They were shooting pretty well, actually. Definitely defensive accuracy kind of shooting. And then I said, okay, now this is fun. I hope he's not listening, because I'm going to tell on him a little bit here. I told him, I said, okay, now go home and clean and lube your guns, okay, because you always want to do that, and especially because you hadn't done it before we went to the range, and it still had, you know, the shipping lube on it and stuff like that. So apparently he did just fine with the Glock, okay, which is pretty hard to screw up when it comes apart and goes back together, pretty easy. But his Smith & Wesson Shield Easy 9mm. I get a call yesterday afternoon, and he goes, Richard, that's what he calls me, is Richard. My wife calls me that too, and so the people who know me through the family end up calling me that. But at any rate, Richard, I can't get my gun apart. Well, I got it apart, but I kind of got it back together, and now it won't go together all the way. And I go, oh, okay, no problem. I'm heading out to the barn. Why don't I meet you in a few minutes out there? So he came over with this brand new Smith & Wesson Shield EZ with about 50 rounds through it. And he had taken it apart, got it apart just fine. But when he put it back together, something slipped underneath, something else or whatever. And it was kind of locked up. The barrel was in a kind of an intermediate position. It actually looks like it had gotten behind whatever it is that's supposed to cock the hammer, but it was not cocked, and so it wouldn't go forward and wouldn't go backwards. So, at any rate, I worked on it with him a little bit, and I got it apart by taking the takedown lever out. And actually the gun, the fire control mechanism, there's a little pin you can take out. So I got it apart, and now I've got to put it back together again. And it's not one that, I got to say, because it's got that kind of like a grip safety or squeeze cocker kind of, well, it's not really a squeeze cocker, but you know what I'm talking about. It's almost like a XD safety in the back or 1911 safety in the back. It's a little bit different setup than I've seen before. And so it's not real intuitive exactly how it goes back together. So I've been looking online for videos on putting it together, but everything that's online is only, you know, field stripping. Well, you don't normally take a fire control mechanism out during a field strip. And so I've got to figure out where a couple of different things are supposed to go to make sure, you know, the slide stop, that's pretty intuitive. But there's a spring that looks like it's on the wrong side of something, which may have been something he did. I don't know. We'll see. At any rate, that's my project for later today. Let's see. And then I had a lot of fun. Now, this was interesting. I have a friend, listener Carl and his wife Sharon, and they – Carl worked with me at Ford for years, and he had sent me, I think I mentioned this last week, he had sent me an email and said, hey, Dick, I need to have you come on over and we can, I want to show you my father's guns and get an idea of what they are and stuff like that. So I went over there and we had a blast together. We looked at all his old cars and trucks and walked around his farm, but we spent a lot of time on the guns. And I got to say, what makes me happy is that, think of this, that so many people around the country, it's just normal business that, oh yeah, well, I got dad's guns, haven't looked at them or something like that. But these guns get handed down through the family and stuff. And it's the way it's supposed to be. And these are some unique guns. And it turns out that his dad, he remembers as a little boy, his dad had an FFL and he used to do, he remembers his dad working on the guns. And he had told me before that, it was something that his dad had worked on and built and stuff like that. So I was anxious to get out there and see. Now, I'm going to go through the list of them, and it's kind of interesting. First of all, we looked at first of all, he said, what's on your hip today? What are you carrying? Which is what I always ask. By the way, you can call in and tell me what you're carrying today. I was carrying my Ruger LCP, and he has a Ruger LCR, and his wife, Sharon, she has an outstanding 6-hour P-238, which is the 1911 style 380. outstanding. So first we had to laugh over those and ooh and ah over them a little bit, which was cool. And then we looked at the rifles. And the first one was a Mossberg 146BA, which is a full size, and it's actually pretty cool. I have some 44 44, and I like full size 22s. And this is a, you know, when you pick up something like a Ruger 10/22, especially if it's like a carbine length or something, it feels like a small little gun. It doesn't feel like a full size gun. Same thing with these nylon 66s. They're so light, they don't feel like full size. But these full size Mossbergs are cool. And they have, and it was in nice shape. It's probably from the 40s, I think. I looked it up already. But the it's got a full tubular magazine underneath the barrel that runs the full length, not a shortened one. It's the full length of the barrel. It holds, believe it or not, 20 long rifles, okay? Oh, my. Gosh, what are the politicians going to do about that when your tubular magazine carries more than oh, it's an assault weapon, I tell you. No, but it's just it's a nice heavy wooden gun that feels, and it, I mean, it probably in its day has dispatched more squirrels and rabbits and varmints than you can imagine. And so it was really cool. And I said, oh, man, that's nice. Then we get into some unusual ones, okay? He has an Osterwaffenfarbe Gess Steyr, okay? It's a Mannlicher stock. It's got an offset scope mount. I have been spending... See, this is what's kind of bad. It takes me down a little rabbit hole, and I want to learn everything about them. So I'm going through them, and I'm not, the only thing I'm not sure quite yet is, because it's got this offset scope mount on it, which was common back then. It's a model 1908, and I believe it was probably built pre-World War I. And so I'm not quite sure whether it's an 8mm Mauser round, which is an 8x57, or if it's an 8x56 or an 8x53R. I think I'm going to need to come back out again and take a look and take some more detailed pictures of this stuff, because I'm trying to figure it out. He actually has the next one is cool, and it is a Mauser Werke AG Obendorf .AN, which is a commercial Mauser, not a, I originally, when I thought it was going to be like a 1903, you know, like a Springfield or something that was, that had been sporterized. No, this is a commercial Mauser, and it's got a steel rib on the top of the, barrel that is probably factory, but I'm trying to figure it out. But all sorts of neat stuff. And I'm looking up the serial number and the proof stamps. And, oh, my God, I'm going to be going down a rabbit hole on these things for weeks. But it's fun. This is what gun guys do, right? Because it's got like a BU proof on it that says it's at least 1913. But then it's got a G proof mark that says they added that in 1914. And the N proof mark was added in 1934. So I think it's probably it's a pre-World War II commercial Mauser. And it's just beautiful. So, and he does, it says 7.9. So I'm assuming it's a 7.92, which is an 8mm Mauser. So I shouldn't assume. I'll have to go through and do some checks on it. Now, the next one I want to tell you guys, this is why you don't just look at a gun and say, oh, this looks pretty good, I'll go shoot it. The next one is an old side-by-side double barrel in 12-gauge. Okay, that's cool. It's the brand is Forehand. And that is actually from, the Forehand company was from like 1888 to 1912. And then they became Forehand and Wadsworth. So this one has to be at least, you know, 110 years old or so. But this is what you got to be careful about when you find a gun. Even, and it looked nice, shiny bore. Looks like it was well taken care of, kept in a safe for 100 years probably. But it is a fine wire twist Damascus style barrel. Do you know what that is? You know, it looks like it's a normal steel barrel. Gosh, and it's shiny and no rust and stuff. I'll think I'll go shoot that, huh? No, because what happens is those old barrels were actually made. They took a mandrel, like the center of the bore, okay, and they wound around it a fine wire, okay? So it's actually made of a bunch of wire, okay? And then it's welded. The tops of the wire are welded into one piece. And the idea was that, well, then any discrepancies or bad spots would be so small it wouldn't be a problem. And I don't know why they decided to do that. And quite often you see a Damascus barrel that has a, I want to say like engraving almost, it looks on it. It looks like a little wormy engraving, okay? But this one here has a rust blue on it that is actually a rust-colored bluing that has a pattern to it. It's very unique, but it's a wall hanger because what you can't do is those guns were designed for old black powder shotgun shells. Okay. And even the pressures on even the lowest powered modern day smokeless power shotgun shell, smokeless powder shotgun shell would be too much pressure for that. And you'd end up with a gun that tries to disassemble itself. So that's why you want to make sure. And I want to say it's a good thing that they asked about it, because just to look at it, it looks like a normal double barrel. So it's pretty cool. The last gun he had was a Savage 99 carbine in 30-30, which I did look up the serial number on that. It was made in about 1938. So some pretty cool guns, okay? And just think, multiply that times 150 million households out there. Oh, well, let's take out the 30% liberals who wouldn't have a gun in their house. But of the rest of the normal people out there that have guns that were dads or grandpas or uncles or aunts or something like that, those are good indications of what the country is like. Okay, why do you think there's so many new gun owners? 21 million gun NICS checks a year and 8.7 million first-time new gun owners and stuff, because people appreciate the right to keep and bear arms. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the politics end of it. And by the way, I found this article and immediately it caught my attention because it's an outstanding looking like Glock 26, okay? But it is maize and blue, and it says Michigan. I'm going to put this picture I'll put on my on the website. It's a maize-colored slide with Michigan on it, and the mag is or the grip is blue. The mag is blue with an M on it. I mean, it is really fancy. If I was a Michigan fan and had a Glock, I would want one like this. I wonder if somebody actually makes this model somewhere. But the reason I'm talking about it is because coming up in the next week or so, after a long 4-year wait, okay, there is a Michigan Supreme Court. They're actually considering the University of Michigan's ban on firearms in a suit called Wade versus the University of Michigan. It's an Ann Arbor resident named Joshua Wade who filed an action challenging the University of Michigan's campus-wide ban on carrying firearms. And they allege that essentially that they should not be able to do that because then Michigan, which is a state institution, it's a state university, Okay. And it has its own autonomy for other things that, like, financials and education mission and stuff like that. But they're arguing it does not grant the university power to preempt Michigan law. Michigan law preempts cities, towns, municipalities, and other quasi-municipal corporations from regulating firearms. Okay, so that would make it being a Michigan entity like that, then it can't do that. So at any rate, a guy, I've had him on the show twice, I think. His name is Steve Doolin. He's the attorney vice chair of MCRGO, which is Michigan Coalition for Responsible Gun Owners. And he is also the attorney representing that group and representing Mr. Wade. So this is going to be interesting to watch because the Michigan Coalition of Responsible Gun Owners gets involved with some of these things. It's a powerful lobbying group, and I'm a member of it. And it's and you've got a guy who's a law professor at the Michigan State University who is the legal guy for it. So this will be interesting to watch. We'll see where this one goes. I do think we need to point out that two bills passed the House this week, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. We're going to end up having to take a break in a few minutes, but they passed a mandatory background check law, which kind of has mandatory, but they carve out a few niches for families and stuff like that. But we'll talk about that. And then also a NICS check timing issue they passed, which we've got to be, now these have not gone to the Senate yet, and what's going to be interesting will be to see if the Senate can maintain the fact that they have to have a 60-person majority, which is they have the filibuster rule, which says that they have to include, you can't just have 50-50 with a tiebreaker, you've got to have more than that, you got to have a percentage of the minority group, which is the filibuster ruling, which says there have to be 60 votes to be able to pass something through the Senate. But they want to change the rules on that. Not the Senate. The Democrats in the Senate want to change the rules. So they are going to, that'll be a big deal over the next few weeks. And there's Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia is the one, along with Kristen Sinema, I think is her name, from Arizona, who have said they do not support eliminating the filibuster. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the Senate. This is why elections have consequences, and stolen elections have consequences as well. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And they call that, by the way, I've got the list here. There are 8 Republicans who voted in favor of this background check bill. Now you might go, well, background checks, what's the deal with that? You know, we have to do them anyway. Well, yes, we do. But this says no more private sales. So it's saying, like, if I want to sell a gun to a friend, I can't do that without going through an FFL. And by the way, how are they going to know that, okay, unless there's a list of who has what guns? And how are they going to know that unless they have a mandatory registration? And registrations lead to confiscation. By the way, we'll talk about that too in a little bit, because there's some people trying to drudge up. So, well, what's her name? Feinstein. She crawled out of her crypt. She's like 87 years old. Okay. And she's up there talking about assault weapons bans again. And so, we will talk about that in a little bit, about what they're trying to push for the, assault weapons bill, what they're trying to push for, other things that, don't seem so bad. But, you know, when you add it all up, it really infringes on our rights. So we're going to have some more discussions. I hate all the politic discussions, but it's something we do need to talk about periodically, because if you aren't aware of it, and contact your congresspeople, if you don't vote with, I always say I'm a single issue voter, and that is that if you don't trust me to keep and bear arms, I don't trust you to run the company. This is Dick, the country. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio at WAM Talk 1600. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And so we were just talking about the Bipartisan Background Checks Act, spearheaded by, a Democrat from California. And actually, this is interesting. Now, it ultimately passed 227 to 203. And do you know what? One Democratic lawmaker, Representative Jared Golden from Maine, voted against it. So at least one of the Democrats is being honest with himself, because you realize that the premise for this is that, if we only had background checks that, and you know what, people can buy guns without a background check because they can do it at a gun show. Well, that's, I want to say most of the gun shows nowadays require their people that are there having tables and stuff to be an FFL, or like, even though there's this one where it's a collector's group, like out at Huron, Huron gun collectors, they in Michigan, if you're going to buy a pistol, you still have to have either a CPL, which meant you passed a check, background check, or you have to have a permit to purchase. So I want to say, no ticky, no washy. Okay, that's the way it is right now. Well, why is it that that they're so insistent about this background check bill? And they say, and I'll get to one of these guys in a minute, but they say, we have to curb evildoers, okay, from having access to firearms. Well, do you know what? If you're a bad guy and you're going to be robbing somebody or be a drug gang member or something like that, chances are you're not going to follow the law anyway to get your gun. Yeah, I'm sure you go down to the police station and you get your permit to purchase, or you get your CPL. No, because most of you have a list of things that they've done bad, as long as your arm, your police records, as long as your arm. Okay, so you're not going to get a CPL, and you're not going to show, you're not going to get through a NICS check either. So what are you going to do? You're going to go down to 8 Mile or Cass Avenue or someplace or downtown Chicago, and you're going to buy a gun from somebody who is selling it from underneath their coat or their trunk, okay? Now, here are the Republicans that voted in favor of the bill. And I would say that there's two from Florida, but the rest of them, matter of fact, one of our own, but there's Vern Buchanan from Florida, Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania, Andrew Carbino from New York, Carl Imanis from Florida, Adam Kinziger from Illinois. We'll talk about him more in a minute. Marie Salazar from Florida, and Chris Smith from New Jersey. Most of these are, I got to say, the three from Florida surprised me, because Florida is a gun-friendly state, okay? And then Fred Upton from Michigan, okay? I'd like to hear Fred Upton's reason for voting for this, okay? And I'm actually going to get into one of them, this guy named Adam Kinziger from Illinois. And he is one of the eight that voted for it. He said, "I firmly believe in the right to keep and bear arms legally. I'm a strong advocate for concealed carry and have permits to do so myself." Okay, so he's a concealed carry holder in Illinois, which is up until recently was very, very hard to get. You had to be a politician to get that, okay? But then he said, following the shootings in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas, in August of 19, he said publicly that we should support H.R. 8 legislation, which is the one for the background check. So he said, "I would vote in favor of this back then." And he said, I just did that. So actually, he kept his word. We should have noted that his word was bad back then and should have gotten rid of him. I think they probably will in the future. But it's funny when you And he's the one who did the quote about the evildoers. But what's funny is that the most pathetic portion of his statement is his claims that he voted in favor of the universal background checks as a way of standing against hatred and portraying his vote as a vote for the better tomorrow for our children. What a bunch of crap, okay? Anybody, any of these people here who don't understand that a background check is not going to prevent bad guys from getting a gun, they're just lying to you, okay? Matter of fact, this guy Kinziger should know, because in his own state of Illinois, every person who owns a gun is supposed to have a firearm owner's identification card, a FOID card. But there's thousands of criminals in Chicago who are more likely to possess a PhD than a FOID license. Come on. You think all those gang members and stuff have registered as firearm owners? They would never pass it. So does that stop them from getting a gun? No, it doesn't. If he wants to deter evil, then he should target evildoers. And that includes bills that go after after criminals, you know, like the, well, Michigan used to have one. I remember, Don Haig from the firing line talking about, there used to be a law in Michigan called a mandatory two. And that meant that if you were caught with a gun that you were not allowed to have, okay, then you did a mandatory 2 years in prison on top of whatever it was that you were doing. So you robbed a bank, you got the bank robbery charge or a 7-Eleven or whatever, and another extra two for the gun charge. But how many places actually, and you know, it's amazing that like in Chicago, less than, you know, 15% of the people even get investigated. And then they get let off because most of these places now, it's unfair. It is racist if you make them stay in jail or you have to pay a fine or something like that. So no bail even. We'll let you right back out. And then they're right back on the streets again. Okay? This is crap. So here comes 87-year-old Dianne Feinstein and somebody named Cicilline, who is out of Rhode Island, which is a hotbed of gunplay, apparently, Rhode Island. I don't even know what Rhode Island does or how many people are in Rhode Island. I can't believe there's that many of the people of the wonderful, great state of Rhode Island creating a bunch of gun crime. But so they've come out with a new bill. Now, they are said, now this is funny, their bill, it should be noted, they're saying, oh, well, it's a better bill than even Joe Biden was talking about for gun bans, because it doesn't include some of the things that he has. Well, that's just because this is just a first step, okay? Because Joe Biden's gun plan, which he campaigned on, says he wants to ban the manufacture, sale, and possession of all modern sporting rifles and ammunition magazines capable of holding more than 10 rounds. Well, she does get into that, okay? But He wants to set up a compensated confiscation program where gun owners can turn in their now banned items in exchange for an undetermined cash stipend, okay? Which means that the government will essentially give you back some portion of your tax dollars that you were taxed to pay them, and they are going to, along with what they're sending over for overseas, you know, all these hundreds of billions of dollars that they just sent overseas in this COVID, fiasco that they just passed. Included in that will be some of your own money that you might just get back if you turn in your evil assault weapon, which is just a semi-automatic rifle, okay? Require gun owners who do not hand over their magazines and guns to the to the federal government as part of that required confiscation program to register them under the National Firearms Act, potentially paying $200 per item for the privilege of keeping those guns and magazines. So, by the way, if you actually thought that these legal gun owners were all going to do bad things with those guns, go out and shoot up schools and things like that, why would you allow them to keep them and just pay a $200 tax stamp? Well, part of that is because they want your name. They want it on a registry, okay? They want to know where your guns are and who owns them and where they're kept, because they're coming, okay? Now, they always say nobody wants to take away your guns, but listen to this here. The gun ban that Feinstein introduced the other day, just 2 days ago, I think it was, it bans the sale and manufacture, transfer, and importation of 205 military-style assault weapons by name. Now, remember the 1994 assault weapons ban that was the AR-15s? Okay. And they didn't. And by the way, it was the ones with the scary features, like a bayonet mount or a flash suppressor or a folding stock or something like that. All those scary features. This, now they got smart. They are naming 205 different military-style assault weapons by name, and owners may keep the existing weapons. Yeah, well, you're going to have to register them, though. Ban any assault weapon with the capacity to utilize a magazine that is not fixed, okay, that has an ammunition magazine and that is not a fixed ammunition magazine. So if you have, like, a tubular magazine underneath your barrel, then you're probably okay, okay? And let's see. And it has to have one or more military, this is their evil things again, including a pistol grip. If it has a pistol grip, oh, that's terrible. A forward grip. Oh, yeah, no, you wouldn't want to be able to control it. No. A barrel shroud. If it has a barrel shroud, that makes it a bad thing. Okay. A threaded barrel. Oh, you mean somebody might want to put one of those dreaded silencers, they call it, a suppressor, okay, something to reduce the noise that you hear, okay, or a folding or telescopic stock, which, by the way, almost all AR-15s have a telescoping stock, okay. Again, owners may keep existing weapons. Well, if there's 20 million ARs out there, what is this going to do, okay? Ban magazines and other ammunition feeding devices that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition, which allows shooters to fire more quickly without needing to reload. Owners may keep existing magazines. Yeah, but you can't transfer these things, okay? Require a background check on future sale, trade, or gifting of assault weapons. Again, they want to know who's got them, okay? Good luck on that. There's 200 and some million guns out there. Actually, there's more than that. There's 330 million guns out there. Not all of them fall into this category, but good luck in registering all those. Require that grandfathered assault weapons be stored within a secure gun storage or safety device have a safety device like a trigger lock. Oh, come on. They throw these little things in there and hope to say, well, yes, see the safety of it, and nobody will be able to get them. Well, actually, what was the guy that did shot up Sandy Hook? He killed his mother, his own mother, and got her gun out of the safe, okay, which it was safely stored. And then he killed his mother, okay? Then, so apparently... but, you know, if it's going to have a safety device or a trigger lock on it, that would have stopped him right there. But no, he killed his own mother. Okay. There are evil people out there. Let's see. Prohibit the transfer of high capacity magazines. Okay. See, where before it said you can keep them, but then it said, oh, and it even says that you require background checks for trading of things like that, but you cannot transfer a high cap mag. By the way, it's a standard cap mag on an AR, 30 rounds. Okay, bans bump fire stocks and other devices that allow semi-automatics to fire at a fully automatic rate. They already did that, okay? But by the way, the only bit of bump fire crime that anybody can ever point to is the Las Vegas shooter. Okay. And by the way, that they actually said probably the use of that probably saved more people than it did injure them, because they are wildly inaccurate. So at any rate, here it is. It's finally here. They out of the shadows. They've got all of their Feinstein and Cicilline's got their bill introduced. They've already passed in the House about background checks and mandatory background checks, which will have to lead to registration to be effective. So they're out of the shadows. Okay. And that's what happens when you either don't vote or your vote is stolen. So at any rate, I don't know. I think we'll talk a little bit about reloading ammo. Okay. I'm nobody's calling in. We're just maybe you're all at the gun show. No wonder you're not calling in, okay? Because all the states are opening back up again for gun shows. But there's an interesting note that I was reading, and because I've been doing so much ammo hand reloading. And by the way, I went through my brass that I got. And this was a reason, I think I mentioned this before, where a guy gave me a bunch of brass, okay? And I said, well, I don't have a gun to fit that, but that's a good reason to get a gun, okay? It's like if somebody gave me a bunch of 10 millimeter brass, I guess I'd have to go out and get a 10 millimeter pistol for it. But a guy had given me a bunch of 7 millimeter Remington mag, and I've been having a blast with that. That is such a, and different rounds. That's one of the things I'm going to look for if I go to the show today, is some more projectiles for it. But, I'm thinking I'm going to get a gun. Okay. So I got a gun, and the guy along with that gave me, I don't know, 100 and some empty brass. Okay. Maybe more, maybe 150, 200. So then I went and bought some, because I had to have some immediately because I didn't have dies yet. So I bought some 7mm Remington mag. So I got 100 rounds of factory commercial ammo. But then just this past week, I was going through some more boxes, and I found 247 once-fired 7mm Remington brass. I'm going, oh, man, I've got more than a lifetime supply. I need more than one gun. I need multiple 7mm Remington mags to go through all this. So at any rate, I've been having so much fun with the hand loading. Who was I talking to? A guy that wanted to get into hand loading, but he's got all of his stuff, but he's not quite ready. And I said, you know, I've got some videos I can lend you. So I'm going to have to lend him some videos like the RCBS video, because he's worried about metering the powder and getting it right, because he doesn't want to accidentally overcharge something. And I said, oh, it's, you know, I was self-taught with it. I did not have a grandpa or a dad that did it. I just decided to do it. And I started out with some single stage stuff. I still use single stage stuff. But if you get the books, you read about it, you get something like the Lyman Manual. I think they're up to the 49th or 50th Lyman Manual. And it's got, not only does it have recipes, the proper recipes, but it also has just a ton of stuff you can read about how you do it. And then I've got some videos, RCBS videos that, actually on a DVD that you can play in the computer, and it takes you through the steps, and you go, wow, this is not as hard as it seems. There's a mystique about it. It's a lot of, there's precision, but it's also, it's pretty basic stuff. And so, matter of fact, if you're loading like I was doing with a single stage, and even when I use a turret press, it speeds things up a little bit, but it's still a single stage. You're doing a pull of the tool for each of like seven different stages when you're decapping it and you're priming it and you're sizing it and you're crimping it and there's just a ton of stuff, and it's a lot of fun. And It's a lot of rote kind of stuff that you're going to do. We have, is it Jack from Ann Arbor with a call about he was denied a gun. What's that about? Jack?
Hi, Jack. Yeah, I went to buy a gun and I was denied on that NICS thing. So I'm going to do a NICS appeal, but you'd have to send in a fresh set of fingerprints, and none of these cops will give you fingerprints these days for that reason. And I'm going to go to a private place and get
are
them
they
done.
Are they not doing a doing them at Washtenaw County Sheriff's Office?
No, they don't do them anywhere, and even the state police won't do it for that reason. So
right.
It's
they won't do it for a NICS appeal?
Right.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I would think that there would be, why don't you send me an email? Because there's a guy that I know that I might be able to ask and see if he knows a way around that. So why don't you do that? It's dick@triggertalkradio.com, and you're Jack from Ann Arbor, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a private place and do it, but my fear is the FBI will say, oh, that's not an approved place, you know. But
So do you have any idea what the rejection was for?
Oh, they don't tell you, no.
Oh, I know they don't, but do you have any idea from your background? Or do you think you're just mixed up?
Well, there's nothing in my background that you know, exceeds their threshold, so I have to just get this appeal in. And I also fear that a lot of people are in my position and they don't even notify you that your gun rights have been taken away. And if you get caught with 122 short round in your pocket, you know, you're going to get the big federal prison danger.
There's a guy that I know that handles legal cases for guns, okay? And I would be happy to introduce him to you, and he might be able to assist you with that, okay? So do you do email?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, so send me a note at dick@triggertalkradio.com, and I'll see if I can put you together with him, okay?
Okay, but one last thing for your listeners. You can check if you're in my predicament by you just get a pistol purchase permit at the police station, you know, and they'll tell you right there if you fail. That way you don't have to go put the money down to buy a gun and then back out and have all that embarrassment, you know.
Well, Jack, I feel for you. I'll look for that email and I'll hook you up with somebody and he can at least advise you. There might be, and sometimes just having somebody with a little legal power behind him can help too, so. Okay.
Great. Thank you so much, Dick. You have a good day. Great show.
Thank you, sir. We've got Jack from Dexter on the phone with a question about a revolver. We're running short time, Jack. Go quick.
Yeah, I carry a .38 normally in my pocket. I carry it empty. And I have a reason for that because I've been in a lot of areas where it's a pickpocket. But I used to have to take that dude out of my pocket. Loaded. If I get into an area or a situation where I think this, and I load her up. What do you think of that? What do other people think of that?
I don't like that idea, but do you have a concealed carry permit?
Oh, yeah.
Then, Jack, we're going to talk about this next week. I'm going to write this down because we're running out of time right now. Got down to the less than a minute left, 10 seconds left. So I'll write it down. We'll talk about it next week, and I'll ask the listeners too, okay? Talk to you next week. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.